So that means don't get upset, resist not evil. That's what McLuhan said. Don't use value judgments in understanding the media global theater. And don't value one thing over another, but notice what's going on. And that means somehow learning how to surf it. So he says, the sailor did this, or as McLuhan put it, quote, the sailor saved himself by studying the action of the whirlpool and by cooperating with it. That's what Ayn says, cooperate with the tech body. It was this amusement born of his rational detachment as a spectator of his own situation, says McLuhan, that gave him the thread which led him out of the labyrinth. It was the amusement born of his rational detachment as a spectator of his own situation that gave him the thread which led him out of the labyrinth. In other words, the amusement of noticing some patterns, unfortunately, by the 70s, the cognitive thrills of pattern recognition become extreme. So this guy, the author, has forgot that McLuhan quote. So then he says, that was written in 1951. 18 years later, 1969, McLuhan returned to his maelstrom metaphor in the Playboy interview, answering the question of whether he is essentially optimistic about the future amid the upheavals induced by the new electric technology. McLuhan said, quote, cataclysmic environmental changes such as these are in and of themselves morally neutral. It is how we perceive them and react to them that will determine their ultimate psychic and social consequences. If we refuse to see them at all, we will become their servants, you know, dupes. It's inevitable that the whirlpool of electronic information movement will toss us all about like corks on a stormy sea. But if we keep our cool, said McLuhan, during the descent into the maelstrom, studying the process as it happens to us and what we can do about it, we can come through. So McLuhan idealism is what he falls back on. So this guy is just applying old McLuhan to the new and media environment of his day, whereas we go past McLuhan. We dump McLuhan. We have the actual solutions. Who would believe that someone would come up with actual solutions to everything? That's the protected by public incredulity of our situation. Wow. What a seminar by Bob. We can sell this one, Carol.
Yeah!
Yeah, three people cheer. The rest are all dumbfounded.
So I would think also, you know, like trying to direct it, you know, like the Chinese have, they have social credit scores, so you can't take all the people and force them to do one thing or the other. I guess in China they can. But.
Well, I'm not saying this guy came up with a solution, but right. You know, the Chinese thing, Ayn said 10 years ago the Chinese were the most adapted culture to survive the 21st century. But that's because they're tactile. They know how to go with the punches. They know jujitsu and all that stuff, right? Judo. They know how to throw the attacker off. But it ain't working because technology is bigger than any historical culture. Whatever values a culture had in their sensory biases and preferences is obsolesced by the Android meme and then the tech body. So China, as I used to say, freezes on the controls and turns into this social credit system, which is, you know, the horror that the West is looking at right now. That's what we're doing. We're all trying to figure out how not to go and turn Chinese.
Yeah.
And it's not going to work. So the solution is to recognize that everything's going to blow up and crash. And if you've gotten to the 33rd parallel, you've got an advantage of surviving, plus being our products, plus listening to me and listening to Ion. And we don't promise anything, but at least you'll know why you survived. It won't be a mystery.
That's a great bumper sticker. At least I know why I survived.
Yeah, because they said the big pain in the concentration camps in World War II was that, you know, psychiatrists analyzed the survivors, and they said the real problem was we didn't know why it was happening. The mind didn't understand why they were suddenly all put on trains and put in these places real fast,
right.
And then and then killed. So the negative stuff needed to be explained. We're reversed. The positive outcome that you never expected needs to be explained. The mind can't take it. It's got to have a reason why you survived. So that's a flip. That's a great conclusion there, Bert. Of a great seminar.
Yes.
Great.
That was awesome, Bob.
Yeah, it was. I recognize that.
It was.
And all is recorded. All is recorded.
Yeah. Recorded. Yeah. We're going to put it out there. Bob solves the world problems once again.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I could have. I would have said all this back on Mike Dyer's show, but, you know, you only had 2 hours, and you had to take calls, and you had to tolerate idiots say shit, so I didn't have a space like this to lay it all out. What has it been, 2.5 hours or something? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And you have students that care. Students that care.
Yeah,
when you
who
were
are actually
on the radio,
prepared.
Yeah, when you were on the radio, I feel like, I mean, and I haven't listened to a ton of CKLN, but there were some that could roll, you know, had studied your stuff, but a lot of it was just, you know, radio, them having a response, right? They just kind of had a general response to what you were saying and not really getting into it.
Yeah, it went from one famous response. I have no idea what you're talking about, Bob, but it sounds right to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a comment for you, Bob.
Oh, I've been quiet this whole time, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's he say? First causes the world destruction and magically saves the day, all but simultaneously. That's right. That's what McLuhan defined advertising back in the late 60s, he said, advertising creates disease and offers the cure. That's what we do. Yeah, Bob explains what we're solving, and you stand back amazed. See, Ian solves it with his working with us and bringing in non-physical aligned with scientific kind of actual making products and actual environments. But Bob has to explain how we got to this bad situation that we're fixing. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm explaining why you survived. Yep. But I didn't do such a good job at it 40 years ago and caused a lot of destruction. Early attempts at it weren't working. But now we got somewheres, and now I'm solving it. You look at that chart. It's got a tiny note chart. You got the McCarthy era. Well, that's the first disaster. Then you have the JFK assassination. Then you have Watergate. Then you have the Battle of Harvest Moon. That's Peter stuff. And then you have Lockdown Bob Rule. Every one of those things were huge disasters because I was the horseman, me and my colleagues were the horsemen, and to wipe out the enemy, we had to take a lot of collateral damage. So to get to where we are today, caused a lot of destruction as we took on each issue. The 50s with McCarthyism, the 60s with the Kennedy assassination, the 70s with Watergate, the 80s with the Battle of the Harvest Moon and the organic robotoids, and then what's the last one? Lockdown Bob Rule, which began in 1990. We've had 30 years of disastrous a kingship by Bob. But now we recognize, oh no, there's a few survivors. It worked. Humanity didn't get totally wiped off the map. Bob saved a few humans. We survived.
We're not done yet, though.
What'd you say?
It's not over. It's not over.
That's right.
That
not over.
Yeah.
Look at Ion. He's typing manically. He says that. Bob explains what death feels like by listening to him read, and then he tells you again. Fuck, just read it one more time. Play Zappa, anything to ease the ear bleeding pain.
That's funny. I'm being the anti-environment to your great seminar.
Yep. I am the only one dares to speak up and tell the truth. So, is that it? Is there anything else to talk about? Truth Social, says Ion. Yep. So, Ion was saying today, I was quite excited today on the show. He was sort of saying, it's all coming to a perfect storm. He was implying it's just a couple of minutes away.
Yep.
So the bat too is in the water, or will be in the water. Is that only in one area now, or is that worldwide?
Okay, direct that at you asking me. Direct it at Ion.
Okay, Ion, is that worldwide yet, or in one area?
You're talking about the BA2T2, BAT2.
Right.
Everybody will taste the bitter water. It's good. It's everywhere.
Yoo-hoo!
Yahoo!
Well, that's good. If you did your bit, you got your products, you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Oh. But it's just how you react. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yay. It's original. Yeah, nobody reacts like I react.
It is atypical, definitely very atypical.
Yeah, surprising. What do they call it? Counterintuitive.
Yeah.
My first famous counterintuitive statement was somebody called up the show in the 80s and said, Bob, what's your take on the environment? Right? Because everybody had to have an opinion about ecology and all that. I said, turn it off!
Yeah.
And everybody goes, what? And after a couple of Nelson them explained it or stumbled along, eventually, oh, the electric environment's the real ecology. That's the real problem, not nature, you know, not the old environment. You got to turn off the electric environment first to even get to the natural problems. So that was my first counterintuitive statement. It was a good one.
Yeah.
Resist not getting fucked up.
Ion. Yeah. Yeah, Ion at bottom is an anarchist.
I like
so,
that.
Was there anything else, Bert, that you wanted to bring up in your studies this week?
I'm enjoying Bob Marshall's Zappa interview. That's what I started reading.
Oh, yeah, it is pretty good. I was looking at parts of it, too, this week for some reason. Anything to say about it?
I just enjoyed the first part where he's talking about being a journalist. And then he goes on to explain that he's 50% political and 50% music. And that he looked at the news differently to come up with a way to do a parody. Genius.
Right.
Very ingenious.
Yep. Yeah, he was, like people like to say back in the 60s, the hippie composers would say, well, I'm just a mirror of society. Well, that was just a vague generalization. Zappa was more technically conscious of that process of creating a mirror to whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that in the music I play tonight. It's 1984, so there's a lot of topical songs in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll post the lyrics again, but it's another roaring along fucking performance.
Yeah. It's definitely a well-oiled machine. I mean, it's interesting. What Ion laid out during the last private session about what he did with
the band.
You know, the band and everything. But they were really, then it made me think about that when Roxy and I were talking about him, he was very, very military-like. So he really, he was using the guys as soldiers, not really as friends. He just, you know, they were there for a mission. Yep. He used them. He, you know, groomed them, got them ready. They did their job and moved on to the next.
Yeah, a lot of them went on and became famous in lesser bands.
Yeah.
More commercial bands. He, in my interview with Tommy Mars in Jerry's backyard in 95 or so, I started to say, well, it's sort of like you worked, you were in a, Zappa was a general, and you were a guerrilla group, you know, a guerrilla cabal or a cadre. And he said, yeah, actually, it seemed like he hadn't thought of that. He said, yeah, that's it. That's what it was. We were conscripted into this, attack machine. What else about that? What's interesting though, Ian says that the disservices of his impersonal approach by 1988 had caught up to him. There's an interview with Ed Mann, and he's talking about, I just couldn't take Frank anymore. He was too used to his personality and what the games he played. He was too aware of them. And he found it really hard to stay with the 1988 band. And Tommy Mars, he quit. He couldn't take it. So his methods, he did get the fucking band together to do, you know, 6 months of concerts, and that was good, or even less than that. It's just sad that he didn't get to go for 2 years. And he says, we would have become the most outrageous band in history. And they would have if they had kept it together. You know, in terms of excellence, it just would have been the best band in the world. But they did enough concerts to have that assessment of them in 88.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an example of what you've been playing, man. If anyone who's ever went to a live concert, music-wise, doesn't matter what it is, and what you're playing, it's really quite an experience. Just to enjoy that sound,
yeah,
in the environment. And then it was interesting, got further in the article where he used all data. That was quite interesting, how he used more than, you know, just lyrics. He was using, I think you asked him about, you know, the visual medium. He used everything. He gave an example that that's why he came up with the idea that there was a mother's invention, that he used anything. He could use anything. That was his something, that knack that he had to be able to use anything. And that then made me think of that playing the bicycle. Remember that was his first public television performance of playing the bicycle. And I read that, and I was like, wow, that's what he's a genius. I mean, he was a parallel world traveler or something, because he was really different. I mean, and in this article, I'm not finished, but just reading it, he was a genius.
I think Cosmic Awareness once had a definition, or it might have been the Evergreens, that intelligence is using the facts, the environment, the data around you to maximum. You know how to use whatever's available, and maybe even invent new things. So paying attention to all the potentials that are in the immediate environment is what intelligence is, and that's what he did. So remember I read you that history of music guy, and he said Zappa used advertising, jingles, Hollywood. He used everything in the information environment, very much like Finnegan's Wake. He put Finnegan's Wake to music.
Yeah.
Same method. And whereas everybody else was trying to fit themselves into some school that had a already guaranteed audience that they could count on surviving, he just went for all of it, or I'll just go out and do what can be done today and see who. He does say in the late 60s that he knew he could get a reasonable audience. There was a market, he said, for what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He said there were a lot of intelligent people out there who would respond.
Yeah.
And then he actually was successful, got all that money, and then he could even be more outrageous. Well, it's always interesting to hear what you did, Bert. I never would have thought of that you're reading the Zap interview. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was just curious about him, because I remember all the things that we uncovered when we did our Zappa session, and then what we just were speaking about, what he did with the band from Ian's point of view. But I remember one part or somewhere we discussed how he helped the musicians also.
Yeah.
Like he helped, you know, change George Duke being a classical pianist to be able to actually expand and sing. And there was some other
and like doo-wop.
Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't
Asshole. Beg your pardon?
He wasn't such an asshole as some of the other, I mean, yes, probably there were some guys that he rubbed wrong, but I mean, I think he was looking at the good of the person, how they could help him with his music.
Yeah. Well, he knew he was making excellent music, so you get picked and you got to perform, and they all knew that. And that's why they kept, the guys wouldn't quit. They wanted to, but they wouldn't, because they still felt loyal to the great music they were making. So when they're performing, you don't hear any of the problems. They're just really having a great time doing what they really trained well to do. So I got a message from Roxy, speaking of Zappa. She sent a YouTube, which I think it was a modern horror story or some movie or something, and it talks about all these different dimensions. And she said there was a phrase in there, like Zappa's phrase. Zappa says his music is anything, anytime, anywhere, da da da, for no reason at all. He has about five adverbs: anything, anywhere, whatever other words begin with A, for no reason at all. And she said this movie trailer was indicating all the dimensions. I realized that Zappa, with that phrase, was referring to multi dimensions. And she said, "That's what we got to do. We got to get back together with Bert and talk about the multi dimensions that Zappa was doing." That's her latest inspiration. She got from some commercial that had a phrase similar to Zappa's phrase. Have you ever seen that? The AAFFNARAA. Capital letters?
No.
That's the, each letter stands for a word in his motto. Yeah, see if we can come up with it here. All right, so, there's the...
It's on chat. Yeah.
Somebody posted it already?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anything, anywhere, anytime, for no reason at all.
Yeah, you see how it's AFNARA? I've got the letters. Anything, anywhere, it's a bunch of A's. What is it? Anything, anywhere?
Anything, anywhere, anytime, for no reason at all.
Oh, yeah. Anywhere, anything. Anything, anywhere, at all?
Anytime, for no reason at
No,
all.
No, the three A's. What are the three A's? Anything, anywhere?
Anytime. Anywhere. No, anything, anywhere, anytime.
Ah, okay. Right, so the ad reminded her of this phrase, and she said, well, the ad was about multiple dimensions. That's what Frank was talking about. So it was a new insight about Zappa. So she had some new things to say. So she thought we should, when she gets finished her ending of her education, she might want to do another Zappa thing. Well, you might be drafted, calling you up, Bert, and do one more.